You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert.
And I'm Antonia Yuhas.
And with us, as he is most weeks at this time, Mitch Jezerich. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, everybody.
How was everybody's weekend?
Yeah, like that. So sort of where to begin. Shange is someone who I saw speak when I was 18 years old, brand new in college in New York City, and one of the more defining moments in my, I think, political, cultural, academic development. She was one of the first people I heard speak when I was in New York City, then read a great deal of her work. And I'm profoundly thankful for her work and her writing and deeply, deeply saddened by her death. Among many, many, many other deeply saddening deaths that occurred this weekend in what is being described as the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in U.S. history, on Saturday, two older black, a man and a woman in Jacksonville in Kentucky, and 14 pipe bombs sent to the Democratic leadership all over the course of 1 week. Exactly 1 week ago, this particular moment in time began with the first pipe bomb discovered at George Soros's house. And of course, George Soros attacked virulently for many reasons, including because of his Judaism and being a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah. So we kind of went into the weekend thinking we were going to have just a serial attempted political assassination to talk about.
That's right.
And came in with what now appears to be, because of the details that came out after the weekend, an attempted redux of a mass shooting at an African-American church and a successful mass shooting at a synagogue in Pittsburgh, which makes for a terrifying political moment. So folks, we're going to be going in depth with someone who has the stomach to research these topics full time after 7:30 news headlines. But we thought we'd take a few minutes just to kind of, you know, put together how we're feeling, how we're making meaning of what's happened over the past several days in our country. And that's what we're going to use this space to do. One thread I've been pulling at, and so the common element for at least two of the men who were involved in these incidences of violence was past allegations of domestic violence. And this often gets lost as we attempt to attach political meaning to mass shootings. But the single greatest predictor of mass shootings, according to academic studies, is a history of violence, especially intimate partner violence. In the case, the gentleman... I shouldn't say gentleman. The man who attempted to break into the Jefferson Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and then shot two African-Americans at the Kroger nearby last Wednesday, Gregory Bush, was subject to a domestic violent complaint by his ex-wife in 2001, who said he not only threatened her, he called her the N-word, and another domestic violent complaint in 2009 by his father and mother. He allegedly lifted his mother off the ground by her throat in that incident. Cesar Sayoc was subject to a domestic violence complaint by his grandmother in 1994. And the reason I think it's important to pull that thread out is just a lot of times when we see these incidences of mass violence, we go back and find out there were all kinds of signs in plain sight and actionable signs in plain sight that we as a society did not care enough about to act on. And I think domestic violence is all too common one of them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there is the evidence of a lot of things that are similarities between these men. Of course, all three men, white men, with looking at their histories of statements that they made during these attacks, as well as their social media histories, white nationalist, anti-Semitic, white supremacist seem to be words that are appropriately being applied to them. And when you look at these histories of domestic abuse, it not only is a herald of violence and a notice of violence and a potential herald of things to come, but it also highlights that we do not listen to women. So when women say, this is a person who attacked me and exercised violence against me, that is not held with enough importance and significance that the accompanying legal response stops those men and keeps them in check. In for example, Gregory Bush, who committed the first, tried to, as you say, enter the First Baptist Church, a historically black church. Unfortunately, the doors were locked. It's the only reason why he didn't get in. The doors were locked to the church, so he went on to the Kroger grocery store, apparently walked by a white man and said to the white man, "Whites don't kill whites," and then shot two black people, a man and a woman, that he had been supposed to have been denied access to a gun, yet he was carrying a gun every single day, according to his father. And the appropriate legal response to someone who's been identified as acting with violence, when that violence is perpetrated against a woman, and particularly when it's perpetrated against a woman who is their domestic partner, we simply do not have the appropriate legal response to keep those men in check so they don't act with greater violence later on. Also, these men, one after the other, have also been said to have had mental problems and weren't given the appropriate mental health assistance throughout their life. Seems clear as well.
I guess I am looking at more of the potential political nature of all this. A term that I learned this past weekend and have been studying up more about is stochastic terrorism. And what this means is mass communication inspired random acts of violence that are statistically predictable, but individually unpredictable. In other words, if the demonization of a particular group of people is being transmitted through mass media, it could also be social media, then you know that at some point, statistically speaking, that there is going to be some type of random acts of violence carried out against that group. You don't know who it's going to be. You don't know when it's going to be. You don't know how it's going to be. But that there is this idea of a correlation between those type of things. And there's not a lot of research behind this. Again, it's called stochastic terrorism. Even it's the origin of its meaning is pretty obscure. It came from a blogger who blogged about it, who's anonymous. And then the Rolling Stone magazine picked up on it in 2016. After Donald Trump, while campaigning, said about if Hillary Clinton gets elected as president and starts picking judges, we're going to need our Second Amendment people to start doing something about that. Roughly, that's what he said. My words, not his, but that's basically what he said. And so that's when the word started being used, and now it's being used a whole lot more. Like I said, I haven't been able to find any statistical analysis backing it up or deep research into it, but I do think of something similar right now, as we see in Myanmar, in which the New York Times reported about a week and a half ago that ex-military officials confirmed that the military was using Facebook in order to gin up animosity towards the Rohingya in Myanmar. So this is something that's interesting. And every time we get to one of these points, whether if it was the shooting at the AME church and the Baptist EME church in South Carolina, whether if it's what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary School, I would like to say even Parkland High School, but after that was one of the first times like, no, nothing's going to happen out of this. I always think we get to this moment of a crossroads of where are we going to go next after this? What do things look like on the other side of this moment? And with this one, I was thinking with the pipe bombs, and I think it's also important not to forget some of the things that even happened before the pipe bombs. Remember, Brian, last week you and I were amazed by how long the story of Jamal Khashoggi had been in the news. Well, now it's completely up, but I think we should see it in this light, and particularly when you had a president, when the story was big, praising a Republican representative for body slamming a reporter. And so this time after Saturday, I was wondering to myself, okay, maybe this time people are going to say, okay, here's an opportunity again, and say, okay, we need to chill out a little bit, right? People, we need to calm down. But that's not what's happening. I mean, you just go to Donald Trump's Twitter feed, and it's amazing. He says this, quote, "The fake news is doing everything in their power to blame Republicans, conservatives, and me for the division and hatred that has been going on for so long in our country. Actually, it is their fake and dishonest reporting which is causing problems far greater than they understand." And then I watched this morning both CNN and Fox News. I wanted to get a sense of how both of them were covering this. And of course, CNN was wall-to-wall on this very story. Fox News spent about 8 minutes on it at the very top, but spent about 8 minutes on this story, and then turns to the caravan and spends about the next half hour talking about the caravan. And then they follow up their coverage of the caravan, and you know, they're not looking at these as like these very unfortunate people that are seeking asylum. You know, they're talking about more of the potential terrorism risks that they see in it. And then they follow that up with this strange segment of somebody who is encouraging another baby boom in America so that American citizens start having more kids so that there isn't a need for immigration. And then they follow that up with a Republican candidate for Senate in Arizona, Martha McSally, and clearly endorsing her in that whole. So, I mean, just the whole thing was really strange to me as I was even seeing how Fox News was handling all this stuff.
I'm glad I have a new term to look up now, stochastic terrorism. It's it ties to something I've been thinking about a lot, which is, you know, some information's come out about the mental health history of the men involved in these acts of violence. And there is a politics to bringing up someone's mental health history after one of these events because it has a way of depoliticizing what they did. And there's a very legitimate critique coming out of Black Lives Matter activists that when you have a white shooter, their mental health history is always relevant. And when you have a shooter of color, it never is. You know, whatever their tenuous connection is to some ideology or religion, that comes first. But also, I think, you know, it's worth saying, even in a circumstance where someone has a mental disorder and that mental disorder leads to the potential of violence, it is society that transmits to them a target, right? These were all men who were latching onto things that were happening in the larger political discourse. And in the case of Robert Bowers, the mass shooter at the Pittsburgh synagogue, it's very clear that he was consumed with this conspiracy theory that involves Jews and specific Jewish groups, according to the conspiracy theory, facilitating a wave of immigrants coming into the United States so as to replace white Americans. And that's what he was talking about as he went in shooting. And this is rhetoric that people as high in the Trump administration as Donald Trump himself have flirted with and teased at in their remarks, their sound bites, and their tweets. And those words have consequences, even if you can never make a direct prove it in a court of law link. The violence is a predictable outcome of what people are doing with their words who have that kind of a bully platform.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important unifying factor here is that this is taking place in the administration of Donald Trump, and men, white men, jimmied up, I would argue, by the words of the president. And I think that in the case, for example, of Robert Bowers, who is clearly very upset about the caravan, about immigrants being brought into the United States by Jewish organizations, and shouted, all Jews must die, he, contrary to some reporting, which is that he was, quote-unquote, a critic of Trump. In fact, he was such a advocate of Trump's Make America Great Again that he reportedly lamented in his social media writing that Trump's Make America Great Again movement can't succeed, quote, while Jews infest the country, unquote. So in order to better, in his thinking, move Trump's message further front, in Bauer's mind, he needed to kill Jews to see that come about. And of course, Caesar Sayoc, who is the accused person who sent now 14 pipe bombs to the leader of the Democratic leaders of the Democratic Party and funders of the Democratic Party. He was clearly a firm advocate of the president's based on his social media reporting and on the what was on his van. I also heard an interview on ABC's morning news program on Saturday morning before the Tree of Life massacre occurred, which was with the Sayoc family lawyer. And the Sayoc family lawyer said that Caesar Sayoc was looking for a father figure and that he saw Donald Trump as a father figure. And that the advocacy, the refusal of this administration to denounce white supremacy, to denounce white nationalism, to denounce violence, but rather Trump in rally after rally, and really he has himself just been more jimmied up in each of these political rallies that he's been in and leading, and his rhetoric has gotten even stronger and stronger. He has been certainly not condemning violence, and as you mentioned, Mitch, in the supporting a congressman who has admitted to body slamming a reporter, encouraging violence, and certainly not silencing it when, for example, his supporters are chanting deadly chants at reporters at his rallies, and certainly not denouncing those either. So I think it's quite clear that we need to be in a moment where we need to be demanding that the president of the United States fundamentally change the way that his dialogue and his actions and his policies are affecting public safety and public discourse.
I saw an interesting political cartoon. I think it was even last week, even before this weekend, but it was of Donald Trump, whose head, whose face was actually a gas canister. And he's at the podium, and in the crowd, all the people are matches, just ready to go. And you're right. The message, he could be talking to these people. Granted, it's not the majority of his supporters, but we do know that there is that potential out there. And he could be talking to his own people, sending out a very different message. Instead, he's still, to this day, this morning, sending out a very virulent type of message. And, Brian, when you say the targeting, what this kind of rhetoric does is it allows for the targeting of particular group. Just one other thing about stochastic terrorism, the word stochastic itself means random. Again, if you have this heated rhetoric towards a particular people, you can expect some type of random act of violence to happen towards that group of people. But in its original term, stochastic means, from its Greek origin, to aim. So you're aiming.
Mm. Yeah. I think something else worth highlighting that's exceptional about this time is the absence of any sense of responsibility. I will give you two examples. George W. Bush, whose administration was responsible for the murder of hundreds of thousands of Muslims in countries abroad, found it within himself after 9/11 to say, basically, to this fraction of the Republican base, cool it. His literal words, Islam is love. He was saying, don't hate the religion, just rally behind my neo-imperialist wars. In 2010, you'll remember Byron Williams, the shooter who was en route to the Tides Foundation and the ACLU, intending to commit a massacre when he was pulled over by police, got into a shootout with them.
Here in Oakland, Bay Area anyways. Yeah.
Our colleague at the time, John Hamilton, got jailhouse interviews with him and determined that basically he got his targets from watching Glenn Beck on Fox News. And Fox News canned Glenn Beck after that came out, because even at Fox News, there was some recognition that the words making their way to the wrong people were putting lives at risk. And that sense of minimal responsibility among elites seems to be completely absent from the present administration. And I would say that has trickled down to the institutions of the right as well, such as Fox News.
Well, and actually, I mean, it's a perfect corollary, because one of the people who was an intended recipient or a pipe bomb was addressed to was Tom Steyer, of course, leading billionaire funder of Democratic causes and an leader of an impeachment proceedings, trying to get impeachment proceedings against Donald Trump. And Tom Steyer went on television to talk about the fact that he was an intended recipient of these pipe bombs. And then Donald Trump tweeted in response, saw Tom Steyer, and then went on a tirade of name-calling against Tom Steyer, which I am not going to repeat
wacky
on Twitter.
Call him
was one of the nicer things that he said. I mean, I think, you know, rather than say, you know, this is terrible that pipe bombs, that he received a pipe bomb, Trump, who is trying in his scripted statements, in Trump's scripted statements, he has been saying, I need to be nice. He has been saying he has been denounced the evil of the shooting, of the mass shooting at Tree of Life Synagogue. But then he gets on Twitter and it's, you know, it is himself, rather than any sort of taking responsibility, rather than any sort of, we need to move forward, unifying future. I think, you know, in some ways we downplay the significance of the president of the United States and the impact that what the president does has on people. So when the president, you know, he is someone who Caesar Sayoc, according to his lawyer, saw as a father figure. The things that Trump says, the people he denounces, dramatically impact, of course, not only public policy, but the thinking of people who are his followers. And when Trump announces himself as a nationalist, when Trump announces himself as a patriot, when he goes after globalists, these are words that are, if not intended to inspire action, it's certainly ridiculous to think that they would not have that potential disastrous
impact. And we should be clear, globalist is a code word for Jews.
That's right.
Many corners of the alt-right. That takes us to 7:30 in the morning. The program's up front. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert.
I'm Antonia Juhas.
Mitch Cesarich.
I'm out of here.
Good to see you.
Yes, goodbye.
Yeah.
Thank you for being with us, Mitch.
Good luck with your show at 10 o'clock. What do we have coming up next, Antonia?
Coming up next, we will be joined by Professor Stephen Gardner. He's a senior research analyst at Political Research Associates, which produces investigative research and analysis on the U.S. right. For the past 20 years or so, he's been investigating white nationalism. He's also been looking at the link with civil-military relations. And I think, Brian, when you brought up George Bush and his wars, we need to see the long arc of the effect of militarism being in wars for the past far too long in the United States, caused by George W. Bush, and the impact of violence and the use of violence and gun violence in the United States. So we're going to have some very important discussions with Stephen Gardner coming up next.